Hi, and welcome to Big Oof coming your way late time, late girl. I'm Brandon.
I'm Shania. And from the bottom of our heart, our bad.
No, we're just playing late. I apologize for everything and nothing because she already did it. So now I don't have to apologize, right? No, I do.
Wow.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's technically my fault the second time. The first time was hers, though.
Yeah, but I had a valid reason, I feel like.
I didn't. I was tired.
And that is a good segment into what have you been doing this week?
Sleeping.
/ 2 weeks?
Sleeping. Because
big fucking mood.
I've taken a nap at... I feel like it's bad now because it's a schedule. I've taken a nap at 2 p.m. for like 5 days in a row, and it lasts
honestly
1 hour.
Those like afternoon naps like hit different. And like when I was visiting my sister, because that's what I was doing when I was out of town, I was taking a nap on the couch, and she had the fucking nerve to judge me in the middle of my work day.
You nap a lot though.
I don't need you to judge me either.
Wait, can we roll back a second? Did you just admit that you nap during your workday?
What I do on my lunch break is nobody's goddamn business. I'm an American.
So you do it for your lunch?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because I'm actually a good employee. So.
Yeah, I just didn't want you to expose yourself. In case, like, your boss ever listened to this specific episode.
I'm way too smart to ever admit to something like that. Also, I'm, like, very fast responsive on Instant Messenger. So if somebody pinged me, I would answer anyway, even if I was taking a nap. So it's
you're
okay.
Even while you sleep, you work?
Even while I sleep? No. No, because I'm not a slave to capitalism.
Anyway. Other than that, I've been playing a lot of Fall Guys. It's very fun game. Very good. If for anybody who doesn't know, it's basically like a battle royale met like Mario Party, and you do like little fun minigame type stuff, like a race. It is. You should try it. You do like a race or a survival game or something like that, and
right,
a certain amount of people qualify each time, and then you keep going until you get to the final round, and the final round is like you either have to survive or you have to race for a crown, and then you win. And I feel pretty good because I've amassed like 25 wins so far in that game. And so
how many games have you played?
We don't need to mention that part. I have 25 wins.
If it's like 25 out of 100, you know, versus 25 out of 50.
I have 25 wins. That's so the only important part.
We're just not going to disclose that.
Do you want to know how many I've actually won? Or like versus the... Hang on. So in this community thing that I follow, I've been doing the stats when we play the community games.
Right.
So I actually can tell you not how many total games I've played, but how many I've like gone to the final round and still lost.
Okay.
So I've won 30, not 25.
Okay.
And I've gotten first place in races that weren't the final 45 times.
Okay.
But I've been to the final 106 times. And I've won 30 of them. So I'm banking...
That's not terrible.
I'm banking a little under 30%.
That's not terrible.
My strategy is mainly like, if I could just get there, I'll win sometimes. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm thank you. Because you're out here. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, because you went like, well, 25 out of 100. And it's like 30 out of 106 is kind of worse than 25 out of 100, and you already made fun of me for that hypothetical.
I didn't feel like that.
You're just kind of.
I'm impartial. I didn't say one.
I feel like you're kind of over just banking on me here. You're just kind of dunking me.
I didn't dunk anything. I don't play sports with balls. I don't do that. So
they do have a game called Fall Ball, which is just soccer. So you know, it's fun. It's a fun game though, and I've played.
I said baller.
Baller. Ball in 2007. Eight, maybe nine, one of those.
Oh my god, do you remember Ball is Life?
I remember Ball Don't Lie, Rasheed Wallace, basically every year I watch the NBA.
You literally said that quote to me like 5 days ago.
Yeah, Ball Don't Lie is still applicable. That'll be applicable every day until the day I die. Okay. Ball Don't Lie.
So does it start lying after you die?
I don't know. I'm not around anymore. Okay, it could, but I don't think it would. I don't think they would do me like that.
No, not you.
Not me. Not to me. Eventually. Maybe some poor other person, but not me. Why to me?
Rip to them, but I'm different.
I've been really into Titanic lately. Why don't you
tell me what you think about Titanic?
Like the movie? Like the whole movie?
Yes. And okay. You said
I know what I said.
Uh-huh.
I know what I said. Uh-huh. Can you let me defend myself without you putting the words in my mouth?
Why don't you relay it to the class first?
I watched the movie for the tragedy. I don't watch the movie for Jack and Rose romance.
Fucking psychopath. He watches the movie for the tragedy.
Yeah, I'm there to watch the boat sink. If I watched Titanic and the boat didn't sink, I'd be like, what the fuck? What I pay for here?
You don't give a fuck about Jack and Rose?
I care about James Cameron guaranteeing a somewhat accurate depiction of a boat that sinking in my movie here.
In his defense, he did try very hard to do that.
He made it as an excuse.
A lot of time. A lot of effort.
You know that, right?
Yeah.
James Cameron made the movie as an excuse to go look at the boat.
Yeah.
He won't give a fuck about Jack and Rose.
Yeah. And just like to bankroll his own submarine trip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so like, it's a good movie. And I've been just really interested in that because a mutual friend of ours, Danny, she's doing a D&D light campaign. It's like Blades of the Dark or Blades from the Dark. It's something like that. And it's like steampunk. And she said, because I'm going to be like the merchant. So I'm not really like a PC, I'm like a merchant character, but I was coming up with really funny kinds of weapons. And right. She was like, honestly, look at stuff in like that late Victorian era. And Titanic's kind of part of that, where like some of the technology is there, but like it wasn't fully there, you know? Like they had some applications, but like the transistor wasn't there yet. So stuff like weird technology kind of comes up in that period. So it's a great inspiration because that's where like steampunk gets a lot of influence from, is that era. And Titanic at the time, 1912, was cutting edge technology. So it's a pretty interesting space to really explore, especially because we know so much about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been basically playing Fall Guys and thinking about a ship sinking for like a week. And that is what I did.
Wow.
Also, Jack and Rose say each other's name like 170 times in that movie.
They do. They Chuck. Do say each other's names Chuck. Very often.
Rose! Jack! That's it. That's the whole movie. I explain the entire romance. Yeah. It's like Andy Bernard. Name repetition. Mimicry. I'm gonna get in that pussy. Andy Bernard. 2020.
Don't forget the car sex. car sex was.
You know what I forgot about that, actually?
What?
So, they're doing the deed in the car, right?
Correct.
And in the movie, the two dudes go down there to investigate them.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the places that the iceberg scrapes through. So those two dudes go down and try to catch them in the act, and they get fucking killed for it. And that's like, damn, that's really unfortunate.
When you don't mind your goddamn business.
Well, they were under orders too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fair. So it's really the servant class is mere fodder for the rich.
Actually, you're right. You're right, though. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was another thing that I learned. Also, the fact that, like, the thing that's kind of weird in the movie, and that I want to know, like, how you think about this. In the movie, right, there's a lot of, like, women dying in the movie, when the Titanic list only has 107 women dying out of the, like, 1,500 people. Mm-hmm. But I genuinely don't know if that accounts for everybody in the lower decks. Like, not the death list, but, like, the full list of people, like, women-wise on board. I don't really know. You know what I mean? So that was something that was interesting, too. Because, like, if you go, like, just by the raw numbers...
Mm-hmm.
A lot of women died in the lower decks, and it's probably like mostly men on the top of the ship by its end, but there are a lot of women screaming, and I think part of that's James Cameron is like, you know, having a mix of death is more tragic in that way.
Yeah.
But it's also like, man, how do they account for that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I'm definitely not like a Titanic historian, so.
I mean, neither am I. I watched the movie, and then I watched somebody else's animated video of like it sinking in real time, and I was like, that's pretty fucking cool, actually, because they do like the messages, and it's like really cool to see.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Honestly. Anyway. This is going to be a Titanic-only podcast. No, I'm kidding. It's
not. Titanic in like 10 years.
You want to hear what the Titanic-only podcast would be?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you a fun fact that I learned, and you're going to go, that's cool. I don't really know, though. And that's the podcast right there, in summary.
That's so, like 60% of men speaking about things.
Yeah, so instead... You're gonna do this for everybody who wants the Titanic podcast, right?
Uh-huh.
They've just learned a fact, and you're gonna go.
That's cool.
Okay. Everybody that wants the Titanic podcast, replay that bit right there. Every time you say a fact. Now you're part of it. Now I can credit you in this episode about Titanic, and you'll be talking to her just like me. That's cool. That's it. So yeah, so that's it for me. What about you? What have you been up to?
What have I been up to? Let's see. So I visited my sister, like I said, and my nieces, and they're like super cute. And my youngest niece, she's like at the point where like only half of what she says makes sense. Mm. So it's like you kind of have to translate. She'll be like something, something, apple juice. And then you just kind of pick up a word that you understand. And you're like, okay, like,
yeah,
I can roll with that.
Like, go fuck. And then you don't really know who she's saying it to. So
yeah, but you're not, like, you're is it like, me? You know what? Is it, yeah. It's is like it, whoever it whoever made you say that, like, they're a little bitch. Like, I'm with you, you know? Like,
but what if you are the bitch?
Then it's me, you know?
Like, in
I probably deserved it.
Who's that person in Rihanna's music video?
Mads Mikkelsen, yeah.
Yeah, Mads Mikkelsen. I am the bitch.
After all, I am the bitch.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with him. But he's everyone really already cool. knows. Anyone who's listened to previous episodes knows that I'm obsessed with him, so I won't go into it. Anyway.
Episode 2 is, I believe, the episode with Mads Mikkelsen.
Where I talk about Hannibal, and you're like, holy shit, can we move on?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly
If anyone wants to take part in a Mads Mikkelsen podcast, just let me know. We could get something. We could get the ball.
No.
And then we could just talk at him, and then he could be like, wow, that's cool.
That's cool. Do you want the Mads Mikkelsen podcast? Okay. Okay, here we go. That's cool.
Okay.
Exactly. And there you go. Now you have two.
There you go.
This is honestly, how many podcasts can say they did three episodes in the time it took to make one? Talent.
Talent. Okay, so let's see. What else? Right, so I visited my sister.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have been playing a lot of Persona 5
mm-hmm.
Royal.
Yeah, you.
And the last time, yes, because the last time I said that I just started it and everything is good. It's same, same, but different. And after about 40 hours of gameplay, I can say same, same, but different. So it's really good. There's a lot of stuff. It's like the new stuff is surprising in a good way. And everything's not insanely different, but the parts that they do have are substantial enough for it to feel like the purchase you made was worthwhile. Would I have bought it for $60? Probably not. But 15% discount, it was enough for me to justify.
Yeah, and I mean, you've been talking to me. It's been a while since you played the first Persona. And
yeah.
So you've been saying how fun it is to go back, and you actually like, you aren't feeling like too much redundancy. And I think that was something that I brought up that might have been a problem, but for you, it's been long enough that I think you've really been having fun with it. And it's been a real treat for me because like she'll send me like, you'll send me messages about Persona, or like I would call you sometimes and be like, hey, what's up? And you're like playing Persona. It's like, what do you think you're going to be doing later? It's like playing Persona, but like in mm-hmm. a different castle.
Yeah. And every time I realize that I bought other games during the PlayStation summer sale.
Mm-hmm.
I just haven't gotten around to them because I literally bought Shadow of the Tomb Raider also. Yes. And I played it for about 10 minutes. And then I thought, I'd rather be playing Persona right now. So yeah. I really think that I might, I don't know if it's going to be, you know, me going straight to the end, because as I've said, I've put in 40 hours and I'm not even halfway through.
Yeah, you take your time on that game a lot. You really do.
I mean, you kind of don't really have a choice.
No, but also you really like to take your time. Like I've seen you play it. Like you like to just look at things, and that's why I like playing it with you. I don't really play with you. I only step in for like bosses sometimes. But like most of the time when I play with you, we just talk about how pretty things are or how much you like characters, and you know, you really just kind of gush on it. I wish we had the time to get you to do a Twitch stream about Persona, like 5 Royal, because you just have a lot of really good stuff to say about that game.
I will say one thing though, with the new kind of abilities you get, mm-hmm. it's kind of easy to get. Well, actually, I'm not sure whether it's easy to become OP or I'm just really good at it now. I keep on thinking about changing the difficulty, but I don't enjoy an intense amount of challenge in a game. But there are a ton of new skill sets that you can use where it's kind of like, okay, well, holy shit, you know? Like, it's pretty great.
Like what skill sets though?
So they have this new mechanic and it's called Showtime. Mm-hmm. And it's essentially where two of your companions, they kind of talk about showcasing this new move. And it can happen during like any point in a fight, mainly, you know, if an enemy is almost dead or someone gets knocked out and they get back up, or I don't know, it can kind of happen at any time, but those are the main 2 points. And there's one with An and Morgana, and Morgana gives An this bunch of flowers. And she's like, oh my God, thank you so much. I love them. And then she pulls 2 machine guns out of it and starts shooting everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those are really fun. And you unlock them as the story progresses. So I just unlocked Ryuji's and Makoto's, but I don't know what it is yet.
Okay. Well, you got to report back on that, at least to me.
Oh, I absolutely will.
Great.
Yeah.
Anything else going on with you?
For this? I had a very long self-care weekend. I bought bath bombs.
Nice.
But not from Lush, from Amazon. Because I couldn't be bothered to go to Lush, actually.
What kind of bath bombs?
It's this 12-pack.
Well, so, did you use one?
No, I haven't used it yet. So but I bought it. That's all that matters.
Let me get this straight. Your idea mm-hmm. of self-care is just mm-hmm. buying it. And that yes, registered I love, is good.
I love participating in consumerism because I am a slave to capitalism.
I want to point out that I legit think it was like 10 minutes ago I commented about working with you, and you said you're not a slave to capitalism. So make a decision, please, for the court to hear. I'm going to need you to choose one.
I'm an anti-capitalist queen, I say, from my MacBook.
That you got from your job.
Yep.
And the microphone that you bought.
Right.
For this podcast, and I really appreciate that. That's an investment.
That's exactly it.
Would you like to talk about would you like to talk about the topic today?
It
was your great idea.
Yeah, so today we are going to talk about philanderization. And for those of you who don't know, it's essentially based off of Ned Flanders from The Simpsons, and it's just used to describe a character that's kind of become a caricature of themselves.
Yeah, it's to further go off that, if you may allow me.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. It's where they take some of their most extreme or noticeable traits, and over time, that ends up developing into their full character. Flanders is just the best example, so we're not going to dive too much into how it is with The Simpsons, but the best example is about Ned Flanders is probably the thing that you know Ned Flanders for, is like the like great googly moogly type of like voice speech and his very Christian overtones and values going from a part of his character that represented a more deep and complex, like good man vibe into somebody who's like just a very like gung ho Christian, funny duddy, I guess would be kind of like the word to describe him at this point. So that's kind of where it comes from, is that evolution usually in all, I would say always in a negative way, of taking the biggest things about a character. And when you get to the end, that's all they comprise. And so.
Yeah. And that was kind of what I thought about. What made me think about it was I am finally finishing up Parks and Rec. I'm on the last season. I'm pretty sure I'm a few episodes away from finishing, but I kind of realized when I started season 7, I think especially around the beginning of it, it just felt like everyone reverted back to their original selves and all of their worst characteristics. were back in full force. And it just felt like the past six seasons, like character growth wise, with the exception of like a few people, didn't really matter. I think especially for Leslie, because it's like, especially her rivalry with Ron that she develops, and her, because season six was all about her like learning how to let go, learning how to move on. But then season seven, she's someone who can't let go or move on and holds a grudge that lasts 2 years.
Yeah, pretty much. I want to hear more about those other examples though as well, because you brought them up and that means me and everybody else is going to go, well, what about the other ones and what about the ones that aren't affected by this?
Jerry, this is Larry, Gary,
Gurgich, the largest penis I have ever seen, aka Jerry Gurgich.
I think that's one of the only things that makes me legitimately uncomfortable about Parks and Rec is the way that they treat him. I feel like it gets worse as seasons go on. It's especially bad in seasons six and seven because Ben is actually like trying to convince everyone that Jerry's a good person that deserves to not be made fun of.
Yeah. He's and a just great dude.
Yeah, he's so nice. I think that's why it makes me so uncomfortable. Because it's one thing to, you know, make fun of someone if they lose their keys or if they're clumsy. But sometimes it seems like they legitimately hate him for no reason.
Yeah, remember that time they pranked him by seeing, like, which they could get to do more work for the other person by having red or blue files and using, like, manipulative tactics in order to get them to win? And so, like,
yeah,
they didn't even include him in it.
Yeah, when Jerry's, like, to April, he's like, remember that time you hid my heart medication?
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's the joke. And I always thought, that's really weird. Like, everything about it just makes me feel uncomfortable.
I think it definitely suffers from like the body of work effect.
Yeah.
There's a certain amount, right? It's kind of like when you have a joke, if you say it like two times, it might not be funny, but that third time it might be really funny again.
Yeah.
With the body of work happening around him, it's essentially, there was a certain point where those jokes were funny and they kept also combining it with escalating, like raising their stakes. So you had like a more frequent amount of them while the stakes were raising. And that's how you get to stuff like heart medication, which alone, because it's so subtle, you might laugh the first time, but then when you look back at everything,
exactly,
they're really shitty to him, especially because some of the things are more valid than others and there's no consistency. Like, I think one time he brought like a tuna sandwich in and everybody was like, oh, Jerry, and it's like this massive like Subway style foot long sandwich,
and that's you.
The thing. That's something that I think is really valid because you can, after working with somebody, because I think they said like Leslie, Jerry, and Ron have worked for like 7 years or something like that, or like maybe not seven, but it's like it's a good amount of time to go. Yeah, it's a good enough time to go, did you really have to do it today of all days? You know?
Yeah.
Or when Jerry does stuff himself, it's really funny. Like when he's running to, because he thinks the pandemic that they're faking.
Says, I have to get gay.
He doesn't take a car. He just runs, trips on the curb of a sidewalk, and just lays down.
Yeah, I'm definitely not saying that everything involving Jerry's not funny or everything makes me uncomfortable. But sometimes there are certain jokes or it escalates to a point where I just feel like it's suddenly very not funny anymore.
Yeah.
They just take a step too far.
Yeah, and that's pretty much it. Because they also ended up, like, that itself was, like, flanderizing. It kept going, and then it turned from, like, people pranking or hating things about him to, like you said, them kind of legitimately not liking him for any reason.
Yeah. Know? Yeah, exactly. Also, Andy, I feel like every season he gets more stupid. With the exception of the first two seasons, because he was really, really stupid the first two seasons. But it was to the point where he wasn't likable at all. But then as soon as he starts his relationship, or as soon as him and April kind of start becoming more romantically involved, he becomes more emotionally aware. But I feel season 7 in particular, he's extra stupid. And that's about 90% of his jokes is about him being dumb.
I would say I want to take your idea and I want to just pick that out and I want to like tweak it a little bit and see if you think of it this way, right?
Sure, yeah.
I think the original character arc of Andy is really good because it's it's an adult child who has done literally nothing to improve themselves since it seems like the age of 15, is going through maturity in a real life setting. That being said, his maturity, I think, really starts to take off when he stops doing it to get Anne back. When he starts doing it for himself, it's a huge turning moment, and that's like why April and him work. I say it's around after the marriage of the both of them that it stagnates for a bit, and then it goes down into flanderization where it's like he just gets really, really fucking dumb and it gets really bad. Like all the jokes become about how stupid he is. Because at first it's like some of the jokes are like he's still kind of dumb and that's fine. But like you said, seasons like 6 and 7, he's just an idiot. He's just straight up stupid again. Like he's gone back down to where he was. So he's regressed as a character from the arc that made him. He was always a bit like a puppy, like really trusting and a little like not bright. And as somebody who's been described as a puppy very often, I get that because I am also trusting and also a little slow to pick up on like certain tells in conversations and stuff. But I call him
a golden retriever a lot.
Yeah, I don't think I'm that stupid, though. And I think that was something that they really hurt in Andy because it was, I think, somebody who a lot of people could relate to in that regard. And they ended up killing his character for it. And that's the danger of flanderization in general, is that it kills relatability and believability in your character.
Yeah, I mean, this is to say, I still enjoy season 7. There have been a few moments that have made me laugh pretty hard. But it's definitely, I definitely feel like the flanderization got really bad in season 7.
That's the thing, is season 7 is still, it's better than season 1. It's better than Mark Brandanowitz being on the show.
Oh my, can you imagine just the fact that Lil Sebastian had a greater cultural impact on Parks and Rec than someone who's been on the cast for 2 seasons.
Yeah. And I mean,
he just fucking left and I forgot about Mark Brandanowitz for a solid 2 years.
You forget about him until I mention him again because I use him as such a good example of irrelevancy.
Yeah, and every single time. single time I'm like, holy shit, right?
I just call him Discount or Knockoff Jim and then move on with it. But
that's absolutely what from the hair to the way he dressed.
To that dumb fucking look on his face.
They definitely tried to make kind of a Jim knockoff and it just didn't work.
Yeah, and I think I've explained that to you before. It's like I always viewed Brandanowitz as that's what Jim looks like to another protagonist. Like, we follow Jim a lot in The Office, and I'm going to use The Office as a flanderization example, so it's not escaping my wrath as this picture-perfect show. It's chock full of it. But Jim is much more of a protagonist, and we understand and relate to him more. Mark Brandanowitz is what Jim looks like to other people, and that's where their complaints of Jim come from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And since we're talking about The Office, then why don't you talk to me about it?
Sure. I think there's a lot of flanderization in The Office, and I think there's a difference between, like, saying season one to season two has flanderization, because they obviously were trying to retool and they had a better idea, and I think that's just understanding what essentially what a remaster was in yeah. media res.
Season one of The Office was pretty rough.
It's experimental. It's mm-hmm. it's very experimental, but they yeah. got out of it, and they had a new plan for season two, and they went with that plan, and they knew they wanted it to run way longer, and mm-hmm. that plan worked. It wasn't every season was perfect, but I genuinely think, and it's okay if you or anybody else disagrees with me, because that's all opinion, you know?
Yeah.
I genuinely think seasons two through four specifically are the best. Like, there's very little that I can say in there that's, like, not gold to me.
Because what, it's very what season good. Is Dinner Party in?
Four.
Yeah, I think I was going to say seasons two through five are my favorite. I've rewatched The Office. I've only watched The Office completely through once.
Mm-hmm.
But I rewatch seasons two through five religiously.
I've rewatched it all the way through one time. So I've watched it all the way through twice, and I've rewatched it three times, stopping at Goodbye Michael the third time. And yeah. Yeah, season five is still good. Season six is still good. Like, season seven, it's still good. Eight and nine, I actually think are good, too. I know a lot of people really don't like it, and it does have a noticeable drop-off. I still think they're good for what they are. Two through four are peak. They make The Office what it is. And I think that's not flanderization there, because all the characters had growth, all the characters had something to bring. Even, like, I think the best examples in The Office are Toby and Kevin, mm-hmm. for wildly different reasons. Toby is the Jerry, Larry, Gary Gergich of The Office and is the prototype, and you can see that he's a better, or he's a worse version of what you see in Parks and Rec, because they balance out Jerry like that, like, terrible at work, like, incredible
his home person. Life is incredible. Yeah,
he's a very successful home life, he's a very happy person, he's wholesome, and he's genuinely a nice person. Toby, mm-hmm. the writers literally make him a loser at every turn they can after a while, and sometimes it's really funny.
I never actually feel bad when people make fun of Toby. So I know it makes me a hypocrite, because I just talked about how I felt really bad how people made fun of Larry for no reason. But Toby, Toby's okay.
I think that's kind of the point, honestly.
Yeah.
I just want to point out, second podcast that I've gotten, like, a flare of Discord messages from, that I'm like, I can't listen anymore for
So it's you who's super fucking popular.
No, it's not me. It's if you're getting it too, it's you just have to mute the channel. But anyway, thing is, outside of people with Toby, not a lot of people actually hate him. A lot of people are chill with Toby. And that's mm-hmm. so his jokes are all coming from, like, writers and whoever's in charge. And that's a running joke. Every person in The Office who is of a position of management or in command in some way hates their HR counterpart. David mm-hmm. Wallace says it in the interview with Jim. Josh says it about their HR person. Like, Michael really hates Toby. When Jim is taking over for Michael with the birthday thing, with the cake, he's like, you know what, Toby, nice guy, little bit annoying, you know? And you can kind of see, like, they just, it's that running joke of corporate hating, or of management hating corporate. And that's what they were going for. And I think that's fine. That only management actually has an extreme distaste for them. With Toby, what it got down to was like Toby went from somebody who is a divorced person working in HR, who's kind of boring and kind of bland, who cares about his daughter. He ended living in New York with seven other people in an apartment, writing his books that were never successful, and everybody kind of wanting to avoid him.
And when he went to Costa Rica...
his body was broke, his neck like 3 days in.
It's so pathetic. It's just so pathetic.
Yeah, and I think it's a flanderization of like situation rather than like particularly the character. They just kept putting him in bad situations and focusing on the trait that's like, look how pathetic he is, you know.
With Kevin particularly, though, I feel like
it's his character.
He just get it's Andy, but worse. Because again,
Andy is
more likable.
I'm gonna get to Andy and Michael, but I'm gonna really get to fucking Andy. But Kevin, I hated that because Kevin was like, I liked it when Jim and Kevin were kind of friends. Like they would like fist bump a little bit, talk about sports. Kevin just seemed like a dude who was like, you know, I'm engaged, but I'm not that like wonderful with my life right now. Like he's working, but he's not super happy. He does poker. He's smart. Like he makes
killer chili.
He like he had good traits, and it turned into like, my name is Kevin. Yeah, because that's my name. Yeah, they call me Kevin. Yeah, because that's my name. Oh, call. That's he got really dumb. Like
he got really dumb
and really about food, and that's it.
It literally got to the point where he started not saying whole sentences.
Yeah, why talk? Why talk big word when small word do trick? They had a whole joke about him being in like a special.
Like, are you talking about him and Holly?
Yeah, where they were in like a special needs program for work, and like the crew tricking them, and Holly believed it.
And Holly believed it because he's just
really stupid.
And he was not that stupid season two.
He wasn't that stupid for like three seasons of the show.
Yeah.
Like, and everybody goes through this. Dwight goes through this. He went from somebody who was really serious to like, I have weapons and I carry a gun in the office.
Yeah.
I think Jim got out pretty safe. The only thing that escalated was his pranks, but honestly, there are very few of them that I see outside the realm of possibility if you get to work early enough and have enough tenacity to just do it.
You know, when you're just that petty, you can get a lot accomplished.
And bored. Because remember he said, like, every time Dwight went to the bathroom, I pushed his desk an inch away until it was up next to the copier. And he said, and that's what I did all day.
Or when him and Pam literally learned Morse code.
Yeah, just to fuck with him.
Yeah.
But, I mean... I think Pam is fine. I think there's like an in joke about Pam turning from somebody who was like really about art and like really passionate to like a needy mom who like can't do anything. But that's not really true because in the show they make after that statement, she's like office administrator and she's like kind of about that life for a little bit because I love near the end of the show, which you might not remember as much because it's in those later parts. She gets on Ryan like fucking hard, dude.
Like, and he deserves it.
Yeah, he does. And that's what I love is she was the person who is like, when Ryan talks about like, that one, musician who died, who hadn't actually died. And he's like, I love his music. It's like, really, really? You love his music? Like you can't live without like, really? Because he's just such a, Ryan got flanderized too, but in that case, he's like a hipster, like know-it-all jerk who doesn't actually he's full imposter syndrome of like trying to seem more educated and smarter and better than everyone else, and she calls that shit so constantly. So I don't think Pam got that Flanderized, but Andy Bernard is awful.
Fucking Andy. And it's the worst too, because he actually goes through a good character arc, and I feel like his character arc finishes when he gets that tattoo.
Yeah.
And then he seems as someone who's still kind of an asshole, but not as much. He's actually gaining his employees' trust and appreciation, and he's not trying to be another Michael. He's just Andy, and he has his issues and eccentricities and whatever. But as soon as he fucks off on the boat for like a season,
it's over.
It's done.
Yeah.
He's the absolute worst after that.
The thing is, I really liked Andy in his first run, and I think Ed Helms is very funny. I think he's a very smart dude, and he's an incredibly talented actor.
Yeah, he's really good at being an asshole.
I don't think they needed him after his first run.
No.
I genuinely don't.
You know, after the anger management, or after he goes to go to anger management?
Yeah. After his first run with the show, which is just Jim going to, I think it's like Cambridge or something like that. It's the other office that's not Scranton. Right. To them coming back. He is somebody that I love being portrayed in The Office, because they'd never portray this again. Even Dwight's not really like this, which is why I think it was so good that Andy would get to Dwight in such a way. Andy is so manipulative and aggressive in everything that he does. He's such a fucking weasel. And
yeah.
Weasel's
a really good word for it, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know, because you've worked in retail. I've worked in retail.
Yeah,
I've worked in a gym as well. Andy Bernard lives in places like that. They're just fucking so aggressive and kiss-uppy at the same time. And they're awful for it. So I love seeing it on the show, and it actually getting to people like Jim and Dwight, and people who, like, this guy is the worst person in the office. You can complain about people like Angela or even like Kevin or anybody, but Andy Bernard first run is the person that I think everybody in the office wants out immediately. And that's what I loved about it. It was such a short, sweet run that said everything annoying about working with people like that. I do agree him coming back and having the manager role. And you know my opinion, I've always thought it was more poetic in a way to see Jim take that role as manager, because he literally turns into Michael when he does it. And it really felt like that was the natural evolution of, like, you'll get there. But I like that Jim didn't get there. Like, it was nice for him to achieve his dreams. Yeah, after him getting the tattoo, I think it was just a downhill coaster slowly. And he got more Flanderized, because he went from somebody who looked like they were learning to not go off of their parents' approval and the money.
Exactly.
Yeah, he looked like...
Not mentioning Cornell all the fucking time.
Yeah, it was self-actualization in motion, because he was finding who both he is as a person and the self-worth in the things that he does for himself, not for anybody else, you know? Yeah. And it just, it was getting worse, but you're right that, like, him after the boat, that's not a person that I view as Andy Bernard anymore. That's a different person. That's Drew Bernard to me.
Drew?
That's Drew.
Drew Bernard.
I think that's what you want to do. Andy Bernard never got off the boat. He had a mental breakdown and fully formed into Drew. And into that's where Drew. It was. Yep.
Wow.
Do you have any other good Flanderization examples, in that smart, smart brain of yours?
Wow, thank you, but she's empty. Let's see.
I'm always empty. It's all fumes.
What have I been watching recently?
They're also in video games and books and manga and stuff. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
Don't get twisted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Especially games that go over long periods or have multiple continuous releases, they can get real bad. Well, that's our time.
I hope you edit that out.
I'm going to edit maybe a good 5 seconds of it, but if that joke stands, then I'm going to keep it. No.
I mean, we're also at 51 minutes.
I know, but I figured we could slip another right in.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think. Cause I know that there are more. I mean, I feel like a lot of these shows are kind of the same way. So if you include, you know, Parks and Rec, The Office, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, even The Good Place.
Mm-hmm. Because Chi, like, yeah.
Yeah, Chi, and I would say especially Tahani.
Yeah, too. Both of them.
And Jason gets stupider every
season. And everybody. Yeah. Actually, it really feels like the more they do, because it started with The Office, just to put it in the chronology, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Office, Parks and Rec, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Good Place. Which we can agree, all very good shows. Top tier TV to me.
I love all of them. Yeah, for sure.
All of them suffer Flanderization, and all of them, that Flanderization eventually leads to their death. Like, except The Good Place, which had an ending, and I think it cut it in time.
They did. I would definitely say they did.
Yeah, but the other three, like Brooklyn Nine-Nine isn't over yet, but when it is, it's going to be when everybody thinks the characters have gone as far as they can take them.
Also, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, they've got their own issues ahead.
To handle, yeah. They've got...
They sure do.
They've got some stuff to work out with that, so...
They do. And, it'll be interesting to see whether or not they actually handle it well. Maybe I'm a pessimist. I don't think they will handle it very well. Because I know that they're going to address it. But I just don't think it's going to be addressed well.
I think, okay, to let the cat out, we're talking about police brutality in America. This isn't some production thing that we've heard of that you guys don't know about. We're talking about the fact that there was a lot of police brutality against protests.
And that Brooklyn Nine-Nine, as much as I love that show, it is propaganda. So,
yeah,
you know.
And it's done things to call out as it can.
Yeah.
But I think there are certain things that they've never super addressed, or a lot of that they've addressed has been like stuff that cops have done in the past. And the precinct that they're in says, but we're different. It's going to be really tough because, like, the whole point is that there's this blue shield that they hide behind in order to do what they do. So how do you balance that while also your protagonists and heroes of the show are themselves police officers?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what we mean.
Yeah, and I hope, and I know you hope too, so we both hope, they pull it off in the most optimal way that, like, everybody walks away happy with it. The people who produced it, the audience, they say the right messages that they're aiming to say in meaning and intention, and everybody walks away understanding and happy with it. Now, I'm not going to say at liberty, like, at what is right and what is wrong. In that case, you know, because I think I'll word it and forget something in some way. What I'm trying to say is they will make an episode with a message, and that intention will be clearly understood. That is the most optimal thing that they can do. And I hope that that works for them, because it's going to be very hard to do that.
For sure. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So that being said, we're not here to talk about that right now. It's just about the Flanderization of them, which is very, 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 very prevalent anyway. So,
yeah,
if this doesn't kill them, that the Flanderization will.
Yeah, it's just it's like you said, you know, it's one of the reasons why ending a show is so important when you're supposed to end it, instead of just letting it go on, because if not, it becomes super obvious when they're just kind of like riffing,
Yeah, they're just
you
making it
know?
up on the spot, or like a only like a year ahead from production to release. They're just kind of like going for it rather than really thinking it through.
And I think it's why I'm really glad The Good Place ended when it did, and I'm really glad that Schitt's Creek also ended when it did, because they're both kind of he's
I'm
doing a
chef's
chef's
kissing a lot at Schitt's Creek. One for every fucking season of that brilliant piece of media. Ugh.
I'm just gonna like smugly interject that I
Every show
introduced
that I watch
the
that's good is a show that she recommends to me. She made me
show.
recommend The Office. So it's like, yes, we are all aware that you are the goddess of shows and TV, and I am a dumb plebeian who doesn't
Shut up.
understand current age. We all
No,
are aware of
I
this.
was gonna say it's not just that, but it's also that he really wasn't feeling it at first. And I really thought, damn, maybe this is the first show that I've recommended to him that he genuinely doesn't like. But no, I was still right.
No,
I was
we
still right.
watched a second episode and I really got it. The first episode that you showed me was just a continuation instead of the very first one. And it
Yeah.
was the episode where she gets where she's just getting interested in that dude from that kid show that you like.
Alexis. Oh my, yeah.
Tommy
Okay,
Q,
so.
right? Is it Tommy Q?
Yep. So the guy that Alexis hooks up with in the first season that she meets, what's his name?
I don't know. I only know he's Tommy Q.
His
Just call him that.
Right. So when I saw him, I was shook because to anyone who's like a Zillennial, if
Yeah,
they
yeah, yeah, yeah,
remember. If they remember watching Instant Star on the end, this is a very niche, this is a very niche memory, I might
yeah.
add. Anyone who understands, God tier. But it was essentially this show about this girl who wins a singing competition and she goes on to, you know, kind of start to become a superstar. And her manager is Tommy Quincy, aka Tommy Q. And I had a huge crush on him when I was growing up. So when I saw him again on Schitt's Creek, I didn't even know what to do with myself. Also, because he just didn't age.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know who Tommy Q is, because she said it's niche and I don't even know it, I just know that's the easiest way to communicate it. I found
Yeah.
out the actor's name. Did you want to hear it?
Yes.
Okay, it's Hottie McBeefcake is his
Shut
actual real life name.
No, man still has like an 8-pack.
He's in great shape, looks good. So that's kind of the point is if you don't know who we're talking about, he's just a really hot guy in the show.
He's got to be at least 40. This is this he's got to be at least in he's got to be in his 40s
Don't
at the
look it.
very least. Yeah, because this show was kind of the same generation as like the original Degrassi crew
Aren't
back
they
when
elders now?
team, you know, it includes Drake.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of where it was around. So he's got to be in his
I'm really excited.
mid-30s, early 40s.
Oh, sorry. There was like a connection lag, so I thought you didn't talk.
Oh
That that's
no.
been happening a lot, so I'm gonna have to edit that a bit.
Okay.
Because that's why if you've heard I've been speaking over you, it's because I'm trying to figure it out, but there's been some connection issue.
Oh yeah, no problem.
Yeah, so sorry about that, in general. I was gonna say I genuinely cannot wait for the Degrassi senior citizen reunion when it's just all the original Degrassi people in a old folks home. But the old folks home is right next to the school. It's literally built right next to it. So that way they can do that cross-generational promotion.
Drake did do that, though. In one of his singles, the music video was a lot of the people from Degrassi reuniting. So it had him, Paige, Spinner.
They named a person Spinner?
Manny? That wasn't his real name. That was his nickname.
Is it because he spun on Dick real well, or like?
You know, that would have been great if that were the case.
Progressive. That's why it's like they named him Spinner.
I think we can't get any better than that. So I think we should just end it right here.
We didn't even talk about Brooklyn Nine-Nine flanderization.
Oh my god, we didn't.
We just trailed off.
We did.
So let's do that real quick, and then we'll end it. So lead us off. Home run hitter, Shania, coming to bat to knock Brooklyn Nine-Nine out of the park and end this whole podcast.
I mean, I still love Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but Andy kind of gets stupider each
Andy
season.
Samberg.
Oh my god, Jake gets stupider. Yeah. I'm nothing about Andy Samberg, though.
Shania said it first. Andy Samberg, the actor, makes dumber acting decisions with each season of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
I actually think it's the opposite. I think he's made a lot of good decisions in his career.
It's not what you said. We have a recording.
I'm sorry.
Sorry, Andy.
Just in case he's listening, I also want him to know that he kind of gets hotter every year. So, like, congratulations.
It's unfair.
For that.
I still look at the video of him saying, "I jizz in my pants." And then I look at him in Brooklyn Nine-Nine actually getting hot. So yeah. I don't know if that does something to your form, but do I have to start trying that now just to fucking keep my fucking youth and comedy brains? Because it's not fair, dude.
I guess.
It's fucking... But yeah, Andy Samberg, smart human being. Jake Peralta. Yeah.
Jake gets kind of stupider every season.
Which is sad because he's supposed to be the kind of, like, I don't really follow the rules super cop. He's supposed to solve cases really fast and be really good at his job, but he genuinely... He still kind of does, but that's a real far-fetched from being, I don't follow the rules because they get in my way from being good at my job.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, now he kind of follows the rules, but he's way worse at his job anyway, which you can make the argument of maybe the rules hurt him, but, like, it's also been the two-way street of, like, Captain Holt not following the rules as much, and he gets better with his job, you know? Mm-hmm. But, I don't know, I think there's a difference between, like, the rules holding him back and him letting it, and him making genuinely boneheaded decisions. I'm cool with Doug Judy being his kryptonite. Like, that flies to me because he's not like that with anybody else in the world except Doug Judy. And then it's just everything out the window.
I love him and Doug Judy's relationship.
Yeah, because that's the bromance of the century right there. I'm willing to let that fly because it's a mix of rose-tinted glasses and what they have in that moment. That's just like, yeah, he's just that dumb. He's going goo-goo gaga over his best bro. So that's fine. Every other person that he makes boneheaded decisions for, though, I'm like, well, you aren't singing karaoke with them, so what's going on here? Are you cheating on Doug Judy, or are you just stupid?
Are you cheating on Doug Judy?
Yeah.
That's a legitimate question, though.
Yeah, that is. Answer, Andy. Send me an email. Answer the question.
We have to know.
Andrew!
On Jake's behalf, I'm going to send a letter to his house.
Yeah, do that, please. He won't answer. He'll say, "Dear Shania, thank you for sending this letter. Your friend, Andy Samberg." And then that will be it. There will be nothing also left. Say,
thank you for saying I get hotter every year. That makes me feel really
also nice podcast.
Does wonders for my self-esteem.
You should replace that other guy though.
Shut up.
I would say like the biggest one to me, and this is something that you'll probably be a little contentious with me, therefore going over our regular runtime with.
Mm-hmm.
The person who is most affected by Flanderization, and mm-hmm. the reason that I think it was kind of a good and bad that she's not there anymore was Gina.
Oh, but I love Gina.
I know, but like Gina went from somebody who's like, I don't really care to, you just drank cement! Like,
yeah,
it's a real downturn.
That's a really good point, I think.
Especially because like the G-Hive was a plot point to save the precinct.
Like, yeah.
Her Flanderizations got worse, and it started affecting the plot incredibly heavily. Unlike The Office or Parks and Rec, where those don't overall affect the plot, she started affecting the entire plot of each episode, or in this case, the arc of episodes.
She did, yeah. I think peak Gina Linetti was during that dinner party where all mm-hmm. of the therapists are sitting around her.
Yeah.
And she's like, I think I'm the Paris of people. And you just see more and more therapists just coming to write about her.
Yeah.
That's my favorite.
She's really funny, and I really like her on like First Watch. It's just that
I totally get what you mean.
Yeah, once that laugh is down, once that after effect is down, you start thinking like she really just kind of like did that, and it really had like repercussions and actions and stuff. But she almost faces none of them for it, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's another big part of Flanderization to me is like it just kind of a lot of shows that do that, everything just kind of goes back to normal. And Brooklyn Nine-Nine is a show that has that everything kind of goes back to normal vibe now. Mm-hmm. Even with her off of it, but it had it when I think most when she was on it, with the only exception being her goodbye tour, like her final season. Yeah. That was the most, and that's what I hated. The most characterization that we got out of Gina for real was her goodbye tour with her and Jake, like recalling them in high school and stuff. It's mm-hmm. funny, but it also is like her giving him real advice and being a person to him. Instead of somebody that I think is more of a stock character for jokes. And that's nothing to do with, what's her name?
Chelsea Peretti.
Chelsea Peretti's performance. She's super fucking funny. Her comedic timing is off the chart.
Her bloodline is too powerful.
Yeah, for real. But like Gina just, it kept Flanderizing, and I think it wrote everything into a corner. So when she left, that's why it's like when she left, it was a good moment too, because it needed, if she ever like, I don't think she's back now, right? Like my memory serves. I think she came back for like a special guest thing once, but.
Yeah. But she's not a cast member anymore.
Yeah. And so if she decided to now, maybe they can kind of alleviate that Flanderization a little more, but. Until then, I think she left at the best moment because it was already getting to be too unrealistic in a show that I've outwardly called very unrealistic. And that's kind of obvious in general because it's like a realistic cop comedy would be a very dry. I think. But I think there's a nice balance between being a dry cop comedy and you just drank cement.
Exactly. So. Okay, friends.
Any thoughts for you?
No. I think I'm good.
Okay, then do your okay friends again, because that was a really nice one. Give me a second take.
Okay. Okay, friends. It's been real. It's been fun. Be gay. Cause chaos. Or You can follow us on Twitter at Big Oof Podcast, or you can watch Brandon on Twitch through twitch.tv/BrawlMite.
Twitch.tv/BrawlMite.
Whatever.
Got it.
Or you could do both. You can multitask. It's none of my business.
Yeah. You know what? If you can find twitch.tv/BrawlMite, because that's not a real website, mm-hmm. and I'm on there, somebody tell me, because I feel like that'd be like the ghost zone, and that way I could enter it somehow and go between planar universes. So that'd be pretty fucking sweet right now.
Yeah.
But other than that, no, I'm just on twitch.tv/BrawlMite.
Or email us if you have questions, rants. Yeah.
That'd be bigoofcomingyourway@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we have Twitters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm at BrawlMite, and Shania, you're...
The Carb Goblin.
Yeah, so...
It's basically me just retweeting a lot of SparkNotes Twitter.
And it's basically me having no tweets right now anyway. But I'm planning on changing that because I'm trying to do a new podcast that I'm not going to talk about here at the tail end. I'll Ooh. Talk about that after it's after I've got the first episode up. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm coming in with a new one, so you can follow me about progress with all that one. But we really appreciate you listening. So
catch you later, sluts.